U.S. car companies ended 2010 with such a strong finish, they're boosting their forecast for 2011. Here's Tracy Samilton of Michigan Radio.
Car sales in the U.S. showed some welcome signs of new life in December. Except for Toyota, still struggling from its recall crisis, car companies reported a significant boost in sales compared to the same month a year ago. Rebecca Lindland is an analyst with IHS Automotive. She lives and works in Boston.
There was a lot of concern, especially at the end there, that the East Coast would just be buried in our blizzard. But in fact, everyone dug out and they went to dealerships.
December was good to all three Detroit automakers. Ford sales were up an impressive 19% over the same month in 2009. Chrysler sales rose 16%. Sales were also up 16% for GM's remaining four brands. Lindland says domestic car companies no longer seem to be staring into the abyss.
The Detroit Big Three really came through 2010 far better than anybody expected.
The improvement means it's no longer crazy talk to shoot for car sales topping 13 million this year. The wild card will be a spike in gas prices, but even there, Detroit automakers are prepared. Ford has two new gas-sipping cars, the Fiesta and the Focus. GM has the Volt and the Cruze. Even Chrysler, or technically its Italian partner, will launch a mini car with great gas mileage, the Fiat 500. For NPR News, I'm Tracy Samilton in Ann Arbor.
China and India have two of the world's fastest-growing economies. But that rapid growth also means there's a risk of inflation. And inflation, especially when it comes to food prices, is a major cause of concern for leaders in the world's two most populous countries. We have reports this morning from both India and China, and we begin with NPR's Louisa Lim in Beijing, where Chinese inflation is over 5% and food prices are soaring.
Not so long ago, northern Chinese winters meant one thing: cabbage, day in, day out. Just 4 years ago, cabbages were so cheap they were being given away for free as a promotional tactic. But visit a Beijing market today, and oh, how times have changed. Cabbage has doubled in price since last year, says Xu Shengru, as she grudgingly hands over money for three big cabbages. Everything is much more expensive than last year, she grumbles. We may be dissatisfied, but we still need to eat. The papers are full of horror stories. Rice up 30% in just 10 days. Sichuan peppers up by an unbelievable 1,000%. Tsinghua University's Patrick Chovanec says this is just the start.
I think that what we're seeing in consumer inflation right now is really just the tip of the iceberg in terms of inflationary pressure in China.
The government has launched an all-out campaign against inflation. China's state-run TV news has shown Premier Wen Jiabao stalking supermarket aisles. There was a surprise interest rate hike on Christmas Day. One day later, Wen Jiabao took part in a very rare live radio show. No emotion was spared as he addressed listener concerns about inflation.
Your words hurt my heart. The central government has already taken 16 different measures. Looking at the situation now, we absolutely have the ability to control the rise of prices. I have confidence.
Inflation is an acutely sensitive political issue here in China, where double-digit inflation fueled discontent in the run-up to the 1989 protests on Tiananmen Square. Today, bad weather and speculation are cited as factors behind the price rises. The government's already imposed price controls on some foods. Projected December figures bring inflation down slightly from current levels. This offers short-term relief, but Patrick Chovanec says such measures won't solve the underlying problem.
In my view, the primary reason why there's so much inflationary pressure in China right now is the maintenance of the currency peg. When dollars flow into China, in order to keep the exchange rate steady, the Chinese central bank has to go in and buy those dollars. And it buys those dollars, it issues renminbi, it adds to the money supply. And normally that would fuel inflation, unless China runs a constantly tightening monetary policy to compensate, and it hasn't been anywhere near doing that over the past couple of years.
So higher prices could be here to stay. This ballad of lament recently hit the web. The lyrics go, cheap things no longer exist. Normal people can't afford to eat green vegetables. It decries corruption and rising house prices and ends by asking, wouldn't we be better off returning to the 80s? This shows how rising food prices represent a Pandora's box of discontent, whereby three decades of progress are undermined by the fact that people feel they can no longer afford to buy their cabbage. Louisa Lim, NPR News, Beijing.
NPR's business news starts with the unemployment rate a little bit lower. The government's latest jobs report shows the economy added 103,000 jobs in December. That is fewer than economists had predicted and a fraction of the number of jobs the economy would need month by month to seriously get back to full health. But at least the economy is adding jobs, not losing them, and the unemployment rate dropped a little bit. It's now 9.4%. NPR's Brett Neely has this report on where the new jobs are coming from.
The jobs are out there. But sometimes, as Jessica Cooper found out, it takes 6 months and lowered expectations to find them. She's an experienced bookkeeper in the construction industry. No jobs there for a while. Throughout her job search, she kept seeing lots of jobs in the healthcare industry, which kept adding positions through the recession.
I felt like every time I was doing a job search, it was for nurses and physician assistants and things like that, and I don't have any training in that sort of a thing.
So Cooper wound up with a part-time job selling clothes at The Gap. It pays $12 less an hour than her old job.
It's kind of disappointing. But at the same time, I mean, I knew that was the way it was going to be. I just needed a job. So I went for it.
Retailers have continued to hire even as the holiday shopping season ends, thanks to growing consumer spending. This week, department store chain Macy's and discounter Dollar General announced plans to hire thousands of new workers across the country. Macy's spokesman Jim Slezewski says the chain will add 3,500 positions over the next 2 years to beef up its online operations. Many of the jobs will be relatively low-paying jobs packing boxes for shipment. But Slezewski says the company is hiring plenty of other workers, too.
Merchants, which are buyers and planners, to programmers, to software engineers.
That sounds good, but Macy's has shed around 20,000 jobs over the past 2 years. So this latest round of hiring amounts to a small fraction of the jobs lost during the recession. While many large companies are once again profitable, labor economist Gary Bertless at the Brookings Institution says they're cautious about spending the big cushions of cash they've built up.
Businesses have to be confident that the demand for the good or product that they sell is going to be reliably bigger in the future than it is right now.
Bertless says companies have become more efficient and have learned to do the same amount of work with fewer employees. And he adds that many companies have been hiring temporary workers instead of permanent ones, just in case the economy weakens again. A spokesman for Adecco, a large temporary staffing firm, told me that the company has seen a significant increase in the number of temp jobs being offered in the past few months. That rings true for Bill Cave in Fort Mill, South Carolina. He's been unemployed for 2 years and finally starts a new job on Monday.
The job is a temporary position. It's for a staffing company doing research on clients that they have.
Some job seekers are getting lucky enough to find permanent work. Boeing hired about 3,000 new workers in its commercial airplane business last year to increase production, and it plans to hire more workers this year, which will have a knock-on effect for Boeing's 22,000 suppliers in all 50 states. Most of those jobs are thanks to orders from overseas, says Boeing spokesman Tim Neal.
Particularly in Asia, the Middle East, but also in places like Africa and Latin America where passenger traffic is on the rise.
But even as Boeing's airliner business improves, Neil says the company's large defense unit is shedding jobs because of Pentagon budget cuts. State and local governments are also cutting jobs, so private sector employers will have to do a lot of hiring if the unemployment rate is to come down. Brett Neely, NPR News, Washington.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Blount.
And I'm Michelle Norris. The digital divide has created a chasm between the nation's two biggest bookstore chains. While Borders is trying to hold off bankruptcy, Barnes & Noble today announced its best holiday sales season in more than a decade. The two superstores have been fending off competition from online booksellers and the ebook, but in very different ways. As NPR's Lynn Neary reports, Barnes & Noble put its money on a digital device with a catchy name, the Nook.
thrilled was the word Barnes & Noble Chief Financial Officer Joseph Lombardi used to describe the mood at his company today. Holiday sales at BarnesandNoble.com were up 78% over last year. Store sales increased by almost 10%. And while sales of hardcover books were better than expected, Lombardi made it clear that Barnes & Noble's popular e-readers, the Nook and the Nook Color, were behind the good news.
We made a big decision to invest a lot of money this year in developing, you know, the hardware and software that has become Nook. And we think we've done the right thing. And I think that's been the most satisfying thing coming out of this holiday for our company.
The Nook is a tide that rises all boats.
James McQuivy is an analyst at Forrester Research. McQuivy says the Nook itself is a popular reading device, but it is also sold in the chain stores. And that, says McQuivy, gives Barnes & Noble an added advantage.
Because people buy the Nook at retail, and then they go and buy digital books, but because they're in the retail location, they might pick something else up while they're there. So the good residual feeling that Barnes & Noble has after Q4 last year is all because of the foot traffic that the Nook drove. That's their salvation right now.
While Barnes & Noble was developing the Nook, Borders was already having financial problems, leaving it ill-prepared to make the investments needed to meet the challenges of the digital age. Michael Norris, an analyst with Simba Information, says some of Borders' problems can be traced back to its leadership.
Because they've actually been through quite a few executives over just a short number of years, and every time there's been an executive change, it basically slows the company down, and it really just hasn't been as nimble or agile as it should have been.
And Norris says even before the onset of e-books, Borders made a crucial error.
For a lot of years, Borders actually relied on Amazon to handle their e-commerce function. So if you were to buy a book from Borders, you would actually be buying it from Amazon, and Amazon would pay Borders a commission. So Borders didn't have a lot of experience developing its own infrastructure. So compared to Barnes & Noble, Borders just really got off to a late start making the online business and the offline superstore business work as one.
As 2010 drew to a close, Borders announced that it was looking for new financing and delaying payments to some of its vendors. Now, says James McQuivy, it's possible Borders will go under.
There's always a possibility of a resurrection here, but at this point it looks like Borders is probably the Tower Records of books. It is probably the book company most likely to go under and to be that big announcement that causes everyone to finally realize that digital has won the battle.
That's not to say Barnes & Noble doesn't still face its own challenges. McQuivy says once the digital device market is saturated, a bookstore will still have to sell books.
That's the battle for the next couple of years, is how do I get you to buy not just the bestseller on your Nook, but to buy a whole bunch of older titles that you weren't even aware of and weren't even thinking about. And that's what Netflix has done in video. It's what Amazon appears to be doing quite well in the Kindle world, and Barnes & Noble needs to do the same with Nook.
And while Barnes & Noble may lose one of its major competitors, it still has another. Amazon and its popular e-book reader, the Kindle, still dominate the e-book and online market. Lynn Neary, NPR News, Washington.